Good morning. It's the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. Give them a follow at their names on socials. Subscribe to this podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. The Fan Morning Show. Rate, review, all that good stuff. And if you were following JD and Ailish on their socials during Friday's Toronto Blue Jays opener, you would have learned some things about Ailish, but also you would have seen that the four of us, and yes, there's a fourth one of us now, all got to enjoy a bit of that game together. Joined now by co-host of the Fan Drive Time, our pal Ben Ennis. Ben, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm great. It's great to see you guys again after Friday. Yeah, that was fun. We had a great time.
Yeah. Got to put you on the spot. Who was better behaved, Ailish and JD, or your kids when you went on Saturday?
I got to give it up for my kids. We showed up to that game early to get the bobbleheads.
2 hours nice. Early. 2 hours yeah. early.
You're one of those
they
guys.
They stayed until the final out of the ninth inning. And yeah,
I like how Ben's they stayed, as in they didn't get in their own cars and leave.
Yeah,
my five.
They took the go train. Yeah.
Here's your presto pass, kid. Hold your brother's hand.
That guy, JD,
Doug, who was late for the Kyle Lowry game, is reeling right now at Ben showing up 2 hours early.
No, so there are things children can do to force you to leave. there's many tools in their arsenal that they can use, including just having a hissy fit and crying. They didn't do that. They hung in there despite the four-year-old, 20 minutes before first pitch, saying, all right, time to go home right now.
I was just going to say, how many requests did you get, though, politely? I like how Ben's like, no hissy fits. Nobody have a hissy fit, but it's actually the only way one of them has any control. The whole game, they're like, Daddy, how long is this? And he's like, shut up. We'll go home soon. Otherwise, I'll give you your presto pass, and you can get home yourself. I'll tell you which bus to take.
Do you get them the upside down ice cream, the cup in the baseball helmet, that ice cream?
Upside down?
We got the baseball helmet.
It was right
side
up.
Yeah, but it goes
up.
In the helmet, you know?
Yeah.
Upside down helmet.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Ailish, the way you describe that is when you get a frozen treat that's blended up at one of the ice cream spots and they hang it upside down so you can see how thick it is.
I corrected myself. You know, the upside down helmet with the ice cream, which looks delicious every time I see it, and I've never, explored it. Is it good?
That's the only way to eat ice cream out of a helmet, because you couldn't eat ice cream on top of the helmet.
That was the helmet belongs to the ice cream. Like, the ice cream's wearing a helmet in case it gets hit at the plate.
I mean, if you did that on a cone, it might work.
You buy that helmet. Why is it upside down? Why is my helmet upside down? This makes no sense. This isn't the way helmet's supposed to be. How would you describe the difference between hanging out with Brunt than meeting up with us?
It was definitely more alcohol. Hanging out with you guys,
because
there was very little when we were doing a 2 hour radio show. There was none. It's a little bit different. I don't recall any super hot takes coming from your end during the game when we were there on Friday, JD. It was similar. Very good baseball takes from both. Both groups of people.
So, except for Sam, who wanted to leave the second that there was a run against the team, where he was we got to go. We got to leave. I don't want to be here. I want to get out of here.
I got to pick up Polysporin.
It's like, I want to leave the entire time. He just wanted out of there. Okay, so this is something that we used to do on Good Show quite frequently, which was confidence rankings, right? Confidence rankings. And I asked Blake and Ailish at the beginning of today's show is, if you had $1 million on the line, who would you want to pitch for you? And I think it's a no-brainer. Is it Alek Manoah for you?
No, it's the guy who got one out in the season opener. Yeah, of course it's Alek Manoah. And it's the most obvious question ever after he shoves it again against the New York Yankees at Yankee Stadium in his first start of the season. But yes, would my answer have been the same before game one of the season? There's no way he can start opening day this year after you sign Jose Berríos to a 7-year extension, and he's a former All-Star, and he's earned it, and Alek Manoah only made 20 starts in his major league career after a limited experience at the high minors last year and then getting called up in May. But no, all this guy has done has it just exceeded every expectation, entered moments that have been crucial for him, for the team's success in the most hallowed grounds, and succeeded. He makes his debut at Yankee Stadium. And I was reading Arden Zwelling, who has a great write-up on the start today on Sportsnet.ca, and I was reminded of when he arrived at the Blue Jays last year. They were in the middle of a 5-game losing streak, and George Springer was hurt, and Alejandro Kirk was hurt, and all he did was basically do exactly what he did yesterday. He's built for the moment. He's also a huge, ginormous human, which I know you know that because you can read the stats on the Baseball Reference page, but I saw him in person for the first time on Friday, and he's like one of those guys that's like shockingly huge when you see him in person. And somebody tweeted at me after a long discussion about Adam Simber's big feet, which was taking over my Twitter feed yesterday. But Alek Manoah wears size 17 shoes. He's a massive human being that's good at throwing baseballs.
There are a lot of big players on the Blue Jays, like by baseball player standards and by normal human standards. And when they did one of my biggest takeaways from opening day was when they did that everyone walks out and gets introduced. Ryu and Manoah are degrees of magnitude larger than everyone else on that team. Like, yes. We haven't seen Bradley Zimmer yet, who's 6'4", 6'5". He's going to look like a tiny string bean next to those guys. They're massive dudes.
Yeah, I was also another element in the Arden's piece this morning, which struck me, which I had to be reminded of, is that like his mom's a single mom, and like they didn't have a place, and they were sleeping on an air mattress at the grandma's, and she didn't have enough to feed everybody, which is like imagine being a single parent and not having enough money for food, and then the money that you can scrape together for food, you have to feed the largest human on planet Earth. It must have been devastating and he has a brother too, who I'm sure is about the same size.
Well, that's the Giannis story. If you read the Giannis biography written by Miron Fader, you know, they're when they immigrate to Greece, they're not a wealthy family, and there's enough kids in that household that Giannis is like sacrificing meals regularly for his brothers and stuff. So when he gets to the NBA and starts eating like a proper diet, he adds so much size and muscle right away. I'd imagine Manoah, I don't know, what do you do for hand-me-downs in a situation like that when you're that big? So I don't know, I'm not surprised he put on that kind of size. More to the actual performance,
fine.
Yeah, I know, I just don't want to do the body thing, but what is your confidence level that he's going to give you 6 innings every time out? Like, I know that that's not going to happen across the board, but he seems as safe a bet as we have right now in baseball.
Well, especially now when he's diversifying the pitch portfolio a little bit through the changeup more than he really ever had at all last year, and it was something that he's working on a little bit more, got a little more life on it. He's going to have the moments, and we saw it even in game yesterday where he lost a little bit of command, and of course he led the American League in hit batters despite the fact that he only made...
That's a feature, not a bug, though.
100%. Yeah, he only makes 20 starts, and he led the American League by a lot in hit batters. So, yeah, he's going to get in trouble with the command on occasion. He's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but could anybody see this guy building off what he did a season ago? You don't even have to build off what he did a season ago. You put that season together, maybe slightly better, over 30 starts, and you're a Cy Young candidate. You're like in the top five in Cy Young award voting in the American League. Mm-hmm. So I haven't seen anything to indicate that there's some sophomore slump coming, that you know he's taking anything for granted, that he believes he's arrived now and it is not going to keep his competitiveness up. Or I don't know where the flaw in his game is. I really don't.
It isn't. Nope.
And
isn't.
Ailish
it's
mentioned
literally
earlier.
An injury.
Yeah, Ailish mentioned earlier too. It's his third time seeing the Yankees, right? So it's not, you're not even worried about the once teams see him and figure him out then.
Yeah, his career, his season debut last year was against the Yankees, but he saw them twice in spring training, and he saw like their real lineup in spring training, and yeah, it didn't faze him. Doesn't matter. They know what's coming. He knows what's coming. Doesn't matter. They can't hit it.
Yeah, I look at it. It's like, why? What's going to lead you to believe that someone has a sophomore slump, right? It's like, okay, it's the long haul of a full season. Well, he's built like a truck, and he looks like he's just, again, he's put on earth to throw baseballs for a very long period of time, and, like, that's it. Or is it the mental side of it? Well, clearly that's not an issue for him. Maybe he stumbles and has, like, a real stretch of bad play, and that's something he has to deal with and get over, because I don't know, when's the last time he sucked at baseball for an extended period of time? Like, he was a stud in college, and now he shows up here, and he's a stud here. Maybe, but I don't see it. Like, we've seen him, Ben, I don't know how many times, every time we talk about Manoah, it's the same thing. Like, when he gets into his struggles, he finds ways to get out of them, and he seems completely unfazed by the struggles that he ends up with. Like, the stuff is very clearly there. Where's the indicator of this changing? It's like you really have to kind of, twist yourself around to figure out a way that Manoah is not going to be the sustainable future ace of this ball club, or the again, confidence ranking number one guy.
Yeah, and why would you do that? No, and the durability thing, so much of that is eye test. I guess it's actually, you can quantify it too, because, you know, he didn't get hurt in the minor leagues. He doesn't have a huge minor league track record. Didn't get hurt in college either. And he has a long college track record. But he just looks the part, right? He just looks like he's going to have that postseason start, and he's going to be maybe having his control issues in the seventh inning and on pitch like 105, and Charlie's going to come out there and talk about getting the ball, and he's going to scream at Charlie, and he's going to demand to keep the ball. It looks like he's one of those throwback guys that would have no issue throwing 150 pitches and then stepping up to the mound 5 days after that. That is purely eye test, and that it's probably not correct, but that's just what he looks like.
JD's muted there, so I just want to pivot, Ben, to I don't want to – I mean, look, the Jays are off to a nice
start here.
Something's
never changed.
There are some negatives within the positive. Obviously, Danny Jansen has hit the IL already with an oblique strain. Mm-hmm. We're going to get a good long look at the Alejandro Kirk defensive catcher experience now. I don't think Zach Collins is much of a guy in terms of – well, they don't – the book on him is that he's not great defensively, and we saw what those plate appearances – looked like yesterday, unless you blinked, in which case you didn't see those plate appearances. And then, you know, Tyler Heineman's just an org depth guy. What's your concern level? We do the confidence index. We also do the concern index with, you know, Alejandro Kirk, everyday catcher at this point, and potentially Tyler Heineman being reused catcher now.
Well, I don't like the Heineman thing. It's like a 30-year-old journeyman who I assume can play good defense. You shouldn't be 30
he would
years
have
old.
To.
My goodness, yeah, because he hasn't hit, so I assume he's a glove man, which is good. That's fine. I like
just
the
a good hang.
Yeah,
he's a good hang. Caleb Joseph, vibes coordinator.
Yeah. Luke Maley, bring Luke Maley back. Like the Luke Maley experience. I have not a lot of issue with Alejandro Kirk's defense. I know his pitch framing. His receiving is actually highly rated, especially like stealing strikes low in the zone. You know, I was talking to Brunt about this yesterday. It's like, do we even know if he has a good arm? Does it matter? Like, does anybody steal bases? No. Like, I couldn't tell you really one way or another whether it's an above average arm or below average arm. It's just base stealing is such an unimportant part of the game in 2022. I do, of course, worry about his ability to stay healthy. If he's catching, you know, 4 or 5 times a week, that's going to be the issue his entire career. I mean, the real question is what it means for Gabriel Moreno if he gets off to a hot start here in AAA. Like, if he is tearing the cover off the ball here in April and early May, and I'm not saying before that, but JD, you remember we were doing shows last year when we had Blue Jay Insider after Blue Jay Insider come on and tell me that Alek Manoah, his earliest arrival was July last year, July, and I said, I don't know, man.
We always believed
spring.
Earlier. We always
and he arrived in May. He arrived in May. And Gabriel Moreno has more experience at the upper levels of the minor leagues than Alek Manoah did. They're totally different case studies, obviously, too, because one's a pitcher and one's an offensive catcher. But Moreno has already produced in limited sample at AAA last year, but went to the Arizona Fall League, killed the Arizona Fall League there as well. It's going to be interesting because I don't know how severely Danny Jansen is hurt, but obliques, yep. Boy, they just sound like those injuries that linger and linger and linger and linger. And if Moreno has a good month of the season in AAA and you're not getting anything out of your backup catcher behind Kirk, I mean, who's to say he's not another May arrival?
This is interesting. I didn't expect that this is kind of where we were going with this. I really thought it was going to be more a conversation about Kirk, but you're right. And I hadn't thought about it. You don't want to fast-track a prospect into a place where you feel as though it's dangerous, but if the kid has a good month, like a really quality month, and you're struggling to, like Danny Jansen isn't healthy by then, I don't know what the option is. You're definitely not playing the vibes guy who can't hit and plays defense. And Zach Collins, like, yeah, I don't know. That seems like he was pretty overwhelmed yesterday by Jameson Taillon. I don't know how much I want to watch that guy. It's pretty clear Kirk can't play every day. And that, in fact, even what was the plan for Kirk to catch? Like once a month this year? Like,
no, it was twice a week and then DH three times a week.
I know.
Ben, to quantify what you were saying earlier, he's 6 of 36 throwing out base runners. Tiny sample for a catcher, but that's not very good. The Moreno thing,
Ben's having a really tough time dealing with the fact that Kirk might not be that good. But, like, it's just, it's a really, it is. It's a real struggle in the chats. Him defending Kirk and being like, oh, does defense matter? That's his new spin on Kirk. But, yeah, sorry, Blake, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, the Moreno thing crossed my mind yesterday because they had to clear a spot on the 40-man with all those roster jugglings yesterday. And to do that, they had to DFA Josh Palacios. Now, you're not crying if you lose Josh Palacios to the DFA process, but how do you call up Moreno? Moreno's already on the 40-man, right? So you org depth-wise, you maybe save a spot there. But because of the late start due to visa issues, Moreno's yet to play in a minor league game. He actually just got activated this week for Buffalo. So I think today is expected to be his Bison's debut.
Blake, how many games of Moreno do you need in the minors? I'm saying good games, not just like games, period. Like, obviously, if he doesn't perform well. But I'm saying if this guy starts to tear the cover off the ball in the minor leagues and you don't have a healthy Danny Jansen, this team's already, like, you know, doing the three-catcher thing. Maybe Kirk can't play defense. What does it look like to you, this scenario that we're kind of trying to paint here, where it's the early Moreno?
One game where I have to watch Tyler Heineman hit, and then I'm ready. Then I'm ready. Like, I really do think the bar is pretty low. Like, this team's been aggressive with prospects in the past, in the recent past, and this is not a season where you can afford to have a significant amount of plate appearances go to sub-replacement level players, which, you know, Collins is maybe right around replacement level. Heineman is below replacement level. If Moreno's bat looks good, and more importantly, given where our concerns are with the three catchers they have now, if Moreno looks comfortable calling games and you're comfortable with his defense and learning the staff on the fly, then I think this could be a quick turnaround. But also, by the time the ideal scenario here is by the time Moreno's ready, Danny Jansen is healthy, but who knows, obviously. So I don't think Moreno would have to show a ton. You give me a 10 days of raking at AAA and handling that staff well, get it going. It's not like you can't send him back down after. It's not like once you're up, you're up.
Oh, yeah. No, and that's the bit. I hate that. To me, that's a fallacy when people talk about, well, you could destroy this prospect's potential future by calling him up too early, and he has a 4-strikeout game, and then he's broken forever.
I'll never make it here.
We all loved Travis Snyder, but Travis Snyder is not every prospect.
No, and you know what? And calling him up early wasn't what killed Travis Snyder. Now, Cito Gaston might have been what killed Travis Snyder, but it wasn't calling him up too early because.
Buddy, be careful when you make fun of Cito. You know, like
he had to play Kevin Millar over Travis Snyder. Yes, he got to play the veterans. Anyways, call up Gabriel Moreno. I mean, I'm with you, Blake. Like a week of games is probably enough for me. I think it's not realistic. It's probably more like a month, right? Like that's what I'm saying. Like I'm not. When I talk about Aurelvis Martinez arriving this year, that's probably not realistic either. But I understand that. Gabriel Moreno, AAA seasoning, after already reaching that level last year and being the best prospect in the organization, that is realistic.
Okay, so Espinal also impressing us. Has he run away with second base? What are you liking from him? And is JD right about him maybe winning an MVP?
I missed that take.
I tweeted that he was going to win an MVP before Vladdy, but I'm pretty sure that that's going to end up on Six Buzz in a week from now.
Yeah, of course.
It's going to be like, this idiot. Vladdy.
Seriously.
That's your goal, is to try and make Six Buzz.
Yeah, I love it.
Well, of course, he was traded for an MVP, World Series MVP. So maybe there was a parallel there, but it's so often we hear these spring training storylines that end up being total garbage, like hey, Kevin Pillar is going to start walking now, and then he obviously doesn't. But this Espinal power thing, different body type, feels like there's some staying power to it. But yeah, he's also hit 300 in his sample at the major leagues. Like, you take his entire career, he's a 300 hitter, albeit, yeah, not a huge sample. And he plays good defense. He played good defense at third base. He's a natural shortstop, so obviously can play defense, and we saw it a little bit yesterday at second base. So if nothing else, if they're comparable offensive players, he and Kevin Biggio, I would err on the side of somebody bringing something to the table that the other one doesn't, and that's defense. But he actually just might be the better hitter. Now, he's not the same offensive profile, and he's right-handed, and he doesn't walk. But I think you have to ride the hot hand here. I mean, you're not in a season where you're thinking about a person's feelings or developing Kevin Biggio and being afraid of him not getting enough at-bats at the major league level that he can't recover his stroke that he had in 2020, where he was at times this team's best player and the guy that I most wanted up in a big spot. But tough, like, Santiago Espinal is off to a better start. There's reason to believe that he brings more to the table than you. I don't know why you would go away from him. I doesn't matter, righties, lefties. Like, I want to see Santiago Espinal starting every day for at least the foreseeable future.
I think that's the key for me, is that it's like, I want to see what he is more than I want to see what Kevin Biggio is. Like, I don't discount that Biggio can be a good utility guy, a good bottom of the order bat, someone that, like, we were joking about it, but I actually do feel there is some truth to it. Is like, it sucks for Kevin because he's in a tough spot where we evaluate him differently because of the way that he started. Like, Ben, you'll remember when he first came up, like, he was on posters with Vladdy and Bo.
We were still like, the is three on young guys. Yeah. Outside the Rogers Center, he's got one of those big posters outside.
That's what I mean. It's like, the three amigos, the three young sons of big leaguers. It's like, no, he was never that. He was never going to be that. But we know what his profile is, I think. And, like, I want to see what Espinal is. I think that there's more to uncover there. And so, yeah, especially when he's hot, let the kid play. Let's find out what he can do, and then especially when you get the defense. This is all the time we have today with you. Thank you for doing it. We always appreciate it. Your basement looks great, so you can go back whatever it is going on.
That's really nice.
Go wake up your kids and tell them that they have to go to an activity unnecessarily for, like, you know, the next 6 hours. Tack on 2 hours a day.
You comment on the basement. I'm just thrilled to learn that I can still wear Volcom, and it's still in.
Ben will not let Volcom. Yeah, he will never let it die.
Honestly, it's a fine hat. Like, what?
It is. It's a good looking hat.
It's a great looking hat.
It sounded like a shot. I mean,
no, come on.
We don't take shots at guests who come on in the 7 o'clock block. Okay, that's not what we do.
Yeah, you shouldn't. It's dangerous territory.
Yeah, it really is. All right. Actually, I rescind everything. You look really handsome this morning. We'll see you later, buddy. Thanks for making time, Ben Ennis, Fan Drive Time. And with that, it's now time for Something to Chew On, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
So, I had a Raptors 76ers series preview go up at sportsite.ca yesterday. You can go check that out. It's just called Raptors 76ers series preview.
I was going to say, like, you really must have spent a lot of time with the name. Like, it's very...
Here's the thing that people don't know until you're a writer, is the writer doesn't make their headlines. the article titles and stuff like that.
Hey, unless that's good for
all you writers,
though.
Blame the headline maker. Well, we didn't.
Unless
do it,
it's a bad pun in the headline, that wasn't me. So, in breaking down, so in addition to that, I had like an hour long chat with Andrew Unterberger, who covers the 76ers for Writes Ricky Sanchez over in Philly. We had a good chat. I mean, he's using it for content, but it was mostly just setting up the series. And the deeper I dug in, the more confident I became that the Raptors can make this a series. We've talked about how Philly was the best matchup of the four potential options. We have now series prices beyond just who's going to win the series. So, for example, this series to go over 5.5 games is minus 190. The books like this to go 6 or 7. The most common score is 76ers in 7, and that's followed by either team in 6. So you're getting plus 475 on the Raptors to win in 6, which doesn't seem like crazy odds. That seems well within the realm of possibility. So something that you on here is mostly just directing you to that deeper dive series preview that I did, because there's a lot of screen grabs and stats and stuff that we can't go in here. But the something that you on for you guys is we've sat with this for a couple days now, and it's easy to be, oh, well, this is the team you wanted, so roll the confidence over. What I'm chewing on is the deeper I go, the more confident I am. Maybe not in a victory. I do think that the overall series price, having an implied probability around 40% for the Raptors, is probably pretty accurate. But how are you guys feeling confidence-wise? Ailish, are the Raptors going to pull this off, stretch the series out? What's going on?
Yeah, they are. I think there's so much momentum with this team. They're scary to play against. We've hyped it up all season, and they play really well against the big teams. Like, you know, they had one of the best records against the hardest teams this year, and they're tough to play against. Teams didn't want to play them. Maybe if you're the 76ers, you didn't care that much, but I think that'll bite you. I think that they have a lot to kind of prove that this wasn't a fluky regular season for the Raptors. They kind of go in with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. So I feel great about the Raptors in this matchup. We talked about it being one of the ones favorable for them. So yeah, I'm all in on it, and it's plus money, so you can't go wrong.
We'll talk to Michael Grange about that series and some of the other Raptor stuff going around at 8 o'clock. We'll have Shams Charania on at 9:30 to talk about those Nick Nurse Los Angeles Lakers rumblings yesterday that I know there's probably some anxiety about. Whatever you're anxious about, whatever you're excited about, whatever you're optimistic about, whatever, hey, it's early, but is kicking around your head with the Toronto Blue Jays, keep those texts coming in, 590, 590. It is Text Line Tuesday. We'll get to some of those after the break. We'll get to some more later in the show. So keep those texts coming, and we'll answer some next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. JD Blake and Ailish, it is Text Line Tuesday. Send in your questions, concerns, comments to us, and we will get to them for you in this block. That is our role. 7:30 and 9:30 especially, we'll be taking your texts, but we'll sprinkle them throughout the show. We got a couple in there. A lot of them have to do with what we just set up before the break. Raptors, Nick Nurse, the drama surrounding the report yesterday that maybe the Lakers are interested in his services. The first question on the text line, Justin from Toronto. Good morning, y'all. Are you guys worried about LeBron poaching Nick Nurse, seeing how they're both represented by Clutch Sports?
Well, there's always a chance, right? You can't rule anything out. We've seen coaches get traded before. Doc Rivers, Jason Kidd, Stan Van Gundy. Usually it's a situation where it appears as if the relationship between coach and team is done, and then all of that comes together. In the CBA, you can trade a coach, but you can only trade them for picks. You can't trade them for players, and the coach has to be on board with it. So this is a case where the Raptors would have to grant permission. Then Nick Nurse would have to want to take the job. Then the Lakers and Raptors would have to negotiate fair compensation for it. Nurse has at least 2 years left on his deal. Just got a big raise into the, you know, $7 to $8 million a year range is what was reported. We'll talk to Grange a little bit more about it at 8 o'clock. But this is one of those things where you can never rule anything out in the NBA. It's just really hard to see A, that Lakers disaster being a better long-term situation for Nick Nurse. Obviously, if he goes there and he wins the title in LeBron's last year, he's sainted, he's goated around the NBA. But long-term, it's not a great situation, on top of which the Raptors have very little incentive to play ball here.
It's not a good situation from a basketball standpoint long-term, but it's also the Lakers where you can attract other pieces and players. It's
what
a
I mean.
Pretty
You're
quick place to turn things around. Yeah. So I will say this, is like, I'm not dismissing this. Like, it's Shams Charania, and they're putting it out there. To me, this is one of two things. And you're right. We'll get Grange's thoughts on this in a bit, so maybe I won't spend too much time on this. But one of two things has happened here. One, the Lakers have just sort of put this out here and said, like, we really want Nick Nurse, and we're going to do the full pursuit. But that can also be just a tactic to the fan base where they're like, hey, we're going to go after the hottest name in coaching right now, and that's Nick Nurse, and someone's leaking that as almost a PR move for Los Angeles, as yes. We're going to do everything possible. So part of me looks at it and goes, well, that's motivation one. Motivation two, though, is that it actually is something that could have some credibility. And we've seen this before. Like, Nick Nurse likes the spotlight, everybody. You know what's bigger than the Arkells? Like, L.A. Like, you know, like, L.A., being on a stage in L.A. And yes, if he somehow went there and LeBron wins in his final year, like LeBron and AD, it's the one of the most upsetting things about the season is that it should be so easy to build a team around those two guys. You put Nick Nurse into that situation, the chip on the shoulder Lakers, potentially a couple of roster pieces move here or there. I really do see a scenario where he could want a challenge like this. And so to me, it feels a little bit like Masai to the Knicks, where you go, hey, I don't see it happening necessarily. I don't think it's the favorite outcome, but there's smoke here. People are going to make attempts here. And if it hits a guy at a certain point in his career, you never really know. Like, this is, it's too credible of a report for me to just say immediately, like, there's no way that it happens.
And it's the Lakers, right? Like, not to do the Lakers exceptionalism thing, but yesterday is the eve of the playoffs, and ESPN has nothing but Lakers coverage on the front page.
Listen, there's no show on HBO about the Raptors, okay? Like, yeah. There's a show on HBO about the Lakers.
And look, the Raptors aren't a small market team anymore by media presence, but the Lakers and Knicks stand ahead above everyone else for the most part. Maybe you could throw the Celtics in there too, but it's the glamour market in basketball, and Nick Nurse is a basketball historian, and he's a basketball nerd. You could see why that would be attractive on the surface, but there's a motivation three here, and it's more of a conspiracy motivation, but that the person who texted in mentioned that Nick Nurse is a clutch client. Well, what would help with Nick Nurse's leverage on the next extension or potentially asking for a raise or something like that? A team like the Lakers coming around and knocking on the door and asking permission to interview. I know he just got the new deal, and usually you don't extend a coach who only has 2 years left, but maybe you do if you really believe he's one of the best coaches in basketball, which, hey, this is his third time in four seasons as a pro head coach, that he's going to get a good chunk of Coach of the Year votes or somewhere on the Coach of the Year ballot. So it's not completely unheard of that you'd want to lock that guy up, and Clutch would want to make sure it's well known that he's a hot commodity.
A lot of good comments here in the text line posing the same type of question about why would Nick Nurse want to go and be the assistant coach as LeBron is basically calls the shots, does everything. Would that be not tempting for him, or would he be able to overcome that type of dynamic?
LeBron, sorry, but he was so excited to coach Kawhi Leonard. Like, coaching a great player, an all-time great player, like Blake just
LeBron
said.
But LeBron is, you know.
What?
He calls,
LeBron's
like, he calls
a GM,
the
though.
Shots. Yeah.
Look, it's not an easy situation, but neither was the Kawhi Leonard thing. And I actually think the basketball nerd and maybe some ego in Nick Nurse could look at that situation and be like, look, it didn't work. And if I can fix this, and imagine all the creative things I could do with, like, hey, I had the Raptors build a top defense with this army of 6'8", 6'9 guys. What if two of those guys were LeBron James and Anthony Davis also? Is a pretty intriguing, like, if you are a basketball strategist, and, you know, yes, there's an ego element there of, like, could you make something work that another coach couldn't, and that the basically basketball world has said is done. I do think that's an element there. So that would be the draw, I think. Money, And that, again, if you make that work and you get LeBron one more ring and you get the Lakers one more ring, it doesn't really matter what happens from there. You're locked in as one of the best coaches of this era. I would argue that that's outweighed by the chance to basically be Popovich North with what you've helped build and continue to build in Toronto, where there's a longer term sustainable thing. You're the coach of the Canadian national team, etc. But we can't put ourselves in Nick Nurse's shoes, and a career of grinding through the British Basketball League and the G League, and you know, it could mean a lot to him to have the marquee franchise and maybe the best player of all time be like, hey, come help us out.
I think that's it for me, is like, one, I don't think of LeBron as a, like, he's, it's a long time since he bumped Eric Spoelstra in a postseason game. It's a long time since he coach killed David Blatt. But again, that I don't even put on LeBron. That was like, we thought we were going to be a completely different team. And so David Blatt is out of town. I wouldn't think of LeBron James as a guy. If LeBron wants you to be his coach because he's the GM essentially here, and we're talking about operating through clutch, the thing that's going to be attractive, or that's hard to see Nick Nurse necessarily turning down or walking away from entirely, is the idea that the greatest player arguably ever comes to you and says, I want you to be my coach. And the back channeling with the clutch stuff is pretty clear and obvious that they're going to be able to do that with ease. It's going to be LeBron wants you, Nick Nurse. How do you reply? And not only does LeBron want you, if you end up coming here, he's going to get that extension immediately too. Like, that extension is going to happen right rip. So you're talking about the best player in the world coming to you, your agency immediately getting you a massive contract, and then also joining the number one glamour franchise after being, again, a coach that was in the G League and Great Britain. Like, that's a pretty damn good sales pitch. And if he really wants to be there, and this is the thing that people need to realize, if Nurse really does want that, it's not going to take, like, it's pretty, I think it's going to be pretty common practice for the Raptors to say, like, this sucks. We don't want this to happen. We're going to try to extract as many assets as we can. But that the asset price is not going to be, like, through the roof, because it's just, like, you're not going to want to have a coach you wanted to be somewhere else. And it's not going to be, like, generational first-round picks. You're not getting the Anthony Davis trade back for, you know, in pick capital for Nick Nurse. Well, so it's scary. Just, it's a scary report.
They also
report.
Just don't have picks to trade, right? Like,
they don't.
You got to go up pretty far into the future, or you got to do the awkward, like, oh, wait until draft night, and then you can trade 2023, but it's conditional because there's a pick swap owed out on that. Like, it's that's where it gets hard for me, is why would the Raptors grant permission other than you don't want to malcontent, and how, what would the compensation look like? Because again, the examples of coaches actually being traded for pick capital in the past are situations where it sure looked like that situation had come to an end on its own, and it would just made more sense to do a trade and get a pick versus eat a bunch of money. And you know, it just made sense in those cases. Hey, where it doesn't hear from Toronto's side.
Can I just ask you a hypothetical? Would you do, because I was thinking about like what the actual value of Nick Nurse is, right? Like, because I think that he is one of the best coaches, if not the best coach right now in the NBA. Like, he's just, we talked about this, like, he knows how to drive the car. Sometimes he pushes it into the red, and that's, maybe I'm think watching still too much F1, but that's how I think about him, as a guy who sometimes drives a little bit too aggressively, but ultimately he ends up with a lot of podium finishes, and that there's really a lot to the fact that as much as we might get frustrated by not getting something out of a Malachi Flynn, or him sitting a bit too much, that overall the guys who play, routinely he ends up getting more out of them than we ended up expecting. Even look at Grange's latest piece that we're going to talk to him about with Siakam, right? That it's a lot of conflict with Nick Nurse. Nick Nurse and Siakam have bumped heads for a while. And I actually kind of forgot about that because of the way that Siakam's playing this season. You read the Grange piece and you're like, oh, right, Nurse, not the easiest guy to be around. There's one quote from the piece where it goes, hey, Nick Nurse's office door is always open, but when you open that door and step inside, you might not like what you want to hear. Like, he's not one to mince words. I am curious how that would work with, like, when he's saying to a lot of players, I want you to work harder, how that would operate with, like, LeBron James in his age 38 season, or Anthony Davis, who's working his way back from an injury. Like, those things are Big time question marks to me. But here's the hypothetical. That was way too long-winded. Is what do you think the actual value would be in terms of, like, the Lakers? Let's say they had their pick this year, which would fall, we don't know where yet, but let's say it's a top five pick.
It's a lottery pick. Yeah,
like, let's say it lands in the top five. It's not a consensus year one, but, like, where's the cutoff line for you, Blake? Just a hypothetical. Where's the line for you guys in terms of, like, the pick capital that would come back where you go, okay, well, even though he's the greatest head coach in the NBA, you have to do this trade from an asset standpoint?
So just for context, Stan Van Gundy was traded for a pair of seconds. Jason Kidd was traded for a pair of seconds. Mm-hmm. And Doc Rivers was traded for an unprotected first-round pick. So that's what you're looking at in the past. Again, though, these are situations that
– Nurse is 100% in the unprotected first-round pick category.
Yes, absolutely. And like – maybe in the this has to be an assured lottery pick category. So in a hypothetical where Nick Nurse says I want out and I'll be very, very unhappy if I stay, yeah, a top five pick is, you know, players are more important than coaches if they are good players. And if you hit on, you know, it doesn't even have to be another Scotty Barnes type, but you add another, you know, a sixth or seventh piece to this core, you really like what you're building. And you kind of trust Masai and Bobby Webster to find the next head coaching candidate, but it would be a big loss. It's not a conversation that I want to have or hypothetical I want to have, because Nick Nurse is really, really good. And I think the Raptors would try everything in their power to make sure he knows that, make sure he knows he's valued and not let the conversation get to that point. But
well,
yeah,
also the Raptors have changed.
Yeah, and you know, if it's a gun to your head situation, yeah, you take a top five pick for it. If it's a situation where he really wants out, but I think you can. I don't think it gets there.
I think top five is probably a little bit too rich for any
coach.
Right,
and you also can't guarantee it unless the lottery shakes a certain way, and then you know who knows. Maybe they use that pick to get a player instead.
But I would say that if you ended up losing your coach. Again, we are talking hypotheticals here based off a report, but if you do end up losing a coach and you get an unprotected first-round pick back, that you've done pretty well in terms of ways to lose a coach. You know, it's what are the other ways?
I do think it sets the org back, though. Big
yeah,
time.
Of course it does. We've talked to multiple people who think that he's going to be here for his entire career. This is not a nothing report. Ready to move on? Because we got Grange at 8?
Yeah, well... a little bit of a similar question, but Claudio and Hamilton. If Nick Nurse jumps ship for the Lakers, is his legacy tarnished forever in this city?
No.
No.
What?
It's the Lakers.
Well, right. But will people not be bitter? Look, I mean, the Raptors fan base is quite opinionated and definitely...
You don't bring the first championship to the Raptors and have that tarnished because you move on to something else. Like no one hates Kawhi Leonard.
I do.
That's true.
Well, the only part of Kawhi Leonard that I dislike is that I am very sure that he walked away from a second championship.
Yeah, I actually don't hate Kawhi Leonard, obviously. But yeah, that's it for me, as always, is that like Kawhi chose comfort over championships. And I just think that should always be brought up with his legacy. And especially if he doesn't win one with the Clippers eventually, like I know he won and he won in multiple places, right? He won in two different spots. And so, and his playoff run will always go down as one of the greatest playoff runs ever. Ever, 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 ever. But Kawhi Leonard, it's been proven in the NBA that even had he sustained another injury, like let's say Kawhi Leonard's a free agent tomorrow, because I think the worst case scenario has happened in terms of his injuries. If Kawhi Leonard decides to walk in a free agency tomorrow, he gets a max contract. Like that's very clear. And so the idea that he needed to take the max and couldn't come to Toronto on a 1+1 or whatever it was to try to compete for another year is a fallacy that I refuse to accept as a like excuse as to why he needed to go to the Clippers. Again, he didn't take a 5-year deal when he went to Los Angeles. He took a 2+1? Because he knew that he wanted to reset his market and that there was nothing that could happen to his lower body that would exclude him from continuing to get that. And so that's all, is that he kicked the championship away potentially. He would have been the favorites to win an NBA championship, and it's really not something that you see in the NBA. In fact, you've never seen it in the NBA. And so for Kawhi, it has to be a part of the legacy. And it might sound like bitter Toronto people, but it's just a fact that Kawhi did that. Like, he took a less advantageous position, and even if he didn't, well, then he greatly miscalculated the value of jumping into a brand new team with Paul George as his sidekick over what the Raptors had already established.
All right, so let's put a pin in the Nick Nurse stuff for now,
yeah.
Because I think, you know, it's probably, this is probably at the high end of how much we should be giving this right now. I don't think there's much to it. We'll see if Grange feels differently. Ailish, what else we got?
Okay, so we'll go a little baseball. How about that? Would you put money on Manoa to win the Cy Young?
Well, it depends on the odds.
Okay, well, I don't have them in front of me, but
I'm sure. Well, what do you think about it, Ailish?
I mean, that's, I feel like that's a bit of a stretch, but, you know, if it's just $5, I think it's kind of a great debut. It's early, but .. I mean,
yeah, he's plus 1600.
He's showing pretty well. Okay.
Plus 1600?
Mm-hmm.
That's low. That's a lot of book confidence in him being at least a contender for that award.
Tied for eighth in the American League.
Yeah, so to answer the question now, absolutely not, because that's an outrageous price. That's not even a just $5 price. But wow, that's pretty impressive. I got to say, like,
that's,
we have Mark Feinstein on
that night.
People are
viewing the Blue Jays this year. That's a vote of confidence.
Well,
certainly.
We have Mark Feinstein, and I know that pitcher wins don't matter, but being on a winning team does. And if the Blue Jays win the division and Alek Manoah is the best pitcher on the staff, I think that there's a pretty clear path to him winning that award. Let's just put it that way. And so I think he is the best pitcher, and I think the Blue Jays are the best team. So it actually does make sense that he'd be plus 1,600. I guess I just thought that Manoah was still more of a relative unknown, and maybe he has bigger profile around baseball. And again, Feinstein's the guy to ask at 9 o'clock about like what exactly that profile is becoming with MLB at large. It's just always so hard for me as a local person to really get a read on the major league landscape in terms of what's a story, because I don't know what the audience is for national major league baseball coverage, right? Like, Blake, you love baseball as much as anybody. You picked the Phillies yesterday. Amazing comeback. Won me a lot of money. Huge money. I had it in a parlay. Ailish, I hate to admit this, but I forgot to put the Caulfield thing, because I wanted the Jets. I told you, so I had my Jets pick. I did work for me, because I put the Jets in with that Phillies pick and a Blue Jays parlay. Nice little hit. I won't lie. I did the hold back from texting Blake, like, and I think the karmic vibes actually worked out a little bit.
Well, I'll tell you, a couple listeners did not hold back. I was getting texts or DMs in the sixth inning about, like, oh, so much for your Phillies. And it's like, okay, well, baseball's nine
Blake,
innings.
Also, you should be like Mario Balotelli and get like shoes made of all the tweets that people send you about a bet that they said lost that ended up winning. Do you remember when he did that? It was Mario Balotelli, the soccer player who got cleats of all the newspaper clippings that were detractors of his. It's an all-time move against the haters. I love that for a wake and rake. You know, the bets lose and you start pumping out the RTs and the screenshots of the people who had no faith.
I'm above that. I will say,
yeah,
though,
it's bad juju Phillies, for the future.
The Phillies having that kind of comeback, and then you are watching, and Brad Hand is the guy who comes in to close the game. My God, no! I was waving it off. He's like, no, stick with whoever's in before. Go to someone else, anyone but Brad Hand. But he gets it done.
My point was just simply, though, even going to this, is like, Blake, I think you watch a lot of baseball. You pay attention because you follow statistics. But I don't think that you want to watch Phillies Mets on a random night. That's just my guess. But okay,
well,
maybe I'm wrong.
The Phillies do have one of the best lineups in baseball. And they were starting Ranger Suarez, who's an interesting young guy. He got shelled. But yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be high on my rankings of games.
I forget that you watch G League sometimes, and so maybe the Major League Baseball of any kind
is okay. Yesterday was also a really bad day in terms of good starting pitcher matchups and stuff like that. Yeah, so that being a second screen on a non-hockey, non-baseball night was fine for me. Keep the texts coming. We'll get to some more of them throughout the show, especially at 9:30. But Jays, Raptors, Leafs, whatever you got for us,